Okay, can you tell me your name, please?
Darren Griffiths.
And where were you born, Darren?
I was born in the Women's Hospital in Liverpool in 1965.
What did your parents do for a living?
My dad worked for Ford's for many years. My dad's in his 70s now. Like most men of his age, he had a lot of jobs in the post-war period, if you like, when he left school. But he spent the majority of his working life at Ford's. My mum was a cook in junior schools.
Whereabouts did you go to school?
I went to Studley Primary School, which is on Egbeth Road, and then I went to Quarry Bank Secondary School, which is more famous for John Lennon, Steve Coppell, Joe Royal.
And Darren Griffith.
And Derek Nimmo.
Oh, Derek Nimmo, oh no, and I do remember it from John Lennon. So when did you actually start working with Everton?
I started on a match day basis in 1995, just before the FA Cup final. I'd done lots of part-time voluntary work for Radio Merseyside, and then that turned into a bit of paid work for Radio Merseyside, covering Southport and Runcorn Marine, the non-league teams, and then they gave me some Tranmere Rovers matches to do. And I was quite fortunate that Radio Everton 1602, which some supporters will remember, was launched in the 1994-95 season, and the producer was the same producer that worked with me at Radio Merseyside, liked what I did and asked me, did I want to get involved? And I jumped at the chance. It was an absolutely dream move for me at the time. I was trying to work my way into football in some way, shape or form. I'd happily done non-league football for three or four seasons, and then to get the opportunity to work for Radio Everton in its formative years was terrific.
So from Radio Everton, were you taken on, was that part and parcel of the Everton Football Club?
It was. The studio was just off the players' tunnel, and it was my job to interview players after the game, and It was very, very quick. I'd gone from dealing with players and managers at Southport and Runcorn and Marine to dealing with Joe Royal at the time and the Everton squad. And I did that job on a match day for four or five seasons, and then a full-time opening in the press department arrived in the year 2000. And I was a civil servant until 1999. Then I worked for the Echo's website for a few weeks, and then I came to Everton Football Club in 2000, and I've been here ever since.
So your time at Radio Everton, was that on a voluntary basis, or were you?
No, there was a small match fee, as there normally is for anyone that works on a match day, catering staff, stewards, what have you.
And then you went actually full time?
Then I went full time in the year 2000 as part of the media department.
So from 2000 to now, what's been your jobs that you've done over the years?
I edited and wrote the bulk of the programme for three or four seasons. We got the Premier League Programme of the Year in 2002, 2003, I think. And as a press officer, obviously, I'm responsible for ensuring that the media get the access that they require. As long as it suits Everton Football Club, we obviously have to be protective of the image of the club and also of the players. I'm very much involved in liaising with supporters, clubs. I'm still very much involved in the programme, the magazine, the production of DVDs, player appearances. It's an all-consuming role, really.
Right. So your official job title is what at the moment?
Is Media and Communications Manager.
Right.
Sorry, Media and Publications Manager.
Okay. So your roles and responsibilities on a daily basis, what you know, you give us an idea of what your day would entail.
It varies too much, really. I mean, this morning I had Phil Neville doing a radio interview with Absolute Radio, which is all part of a competition Absolute Radio have got running at the moment. They're inviting professional footballers to ring in to speak about a charity, and they're going to make a donation to one of the charities at the end of the week. So I was in before 9 o'clock so that we can have Phil Neville ready for him to speak to Absolute Radio. Just been going through a few emails. We've got the Everton Former Players Foundation dinner on Monday evening at Goodison, of which I'm a trustee. I'm also the MC of that event on Monday night, so there's a rather long script to write because there are over 40 ex-players going who'll need to be interviewed on the night. We've got the media coming in, that's 1:30 for David Moyes to do his pre-match press conference. I always speak to the media beforehand and just make sure that they're not going to ask him anything what I call left of centre, anything non-match relevant, because these days Sky have got an awful lot of airtime to fill, and I know for a fact that today he'll be asked about Ian Holloway's decision to make 10 changes, and basically I just nip any daft questions in the bud, and then be back to clearing emails and preparing for the West Brom programme.
So today, would you be advised, Mr. Moyes, as to, you know, what you think should be the answers to those questions, or does he normally do it himself?
He normally does it himself because he's very good at dealing with the media. But I always let him know what sort of questions are going to come his way. We sort of have a brief conversation beforehand, and then a brief debriefing, if you like, afterwards. And you know, he'll ask me what I think the press will go on, and you know how the interviews went. And but he's very good. Have to say the manager is very, very good with dealing with the media.
Okay, so you can't really say that you've got a typical day.
No, I don't think many people at Everton Football Club can really. Anything could crop up. For example, I got a phone call this morning at about 9:15. Phil Neville just finished his radio interview with Absolute Radio. He hung up my phone because we did it on my mobile, and then my phone rang and Phil answered it, and it was a journalist from London wanting to do an interview with Leon Osman. And he didn't realise he was speaking to Phil Neville, and Phil said, Phil told him he was my secretary, and that he takes all my calls, and that if he wants an interview with the player, he'll have to email. Then he put me on, and the journalist was flabbergasted when he knew he'd been speaking to Phil Neville. So you just don't know what's going to come at you. You really don't. There might be an issue at the press conference today that we'll need looking at. You just never know.
So it's quite a big role you've got within the club, and do you get to know the players on a personal basis? Do you advise them about press? And
there's an awful lot of personal contact with the manager, the coaching staff, and the players, and ex-players as well. We have a lot of dealings. Obviously, I work closely with Graham Sharp. Graham sits next to me in the office at Goodison. Ian Snowden does a lot for us, and obviously, I sort of look after the ex-players that come in on a match day to host the lounges. You know, Joe Parkinson, Alan Whittle, Sharpie, Duncan McKenzie, and I'm the MC in the Club Everton facility, which is the marquee in the corner of the big car park. I'm the MC on a match day, and I have an ex-player with me every game.
Would you describe your job as an error of 24 hours then? You seem to do
I think a lot of people at Everton Football Club do. I mean, the inventions of the BlackBerry has changed everybody's working hours, because every time you take a call or a text or pick your phone up, it's too big a temptation not to check your emails. So you can be sending emails any time of the day or night. I mean, it was really useful pre-season when we were in Australia for 3 weeks to be able to send emails and receive emails on the BlackBerry, because obviously there was such a massive time difference. But I'm far from the only one, but it is 24. It can be 24/7, especially when there's games on a Sunday or a Monday, because you've got all the build up that just wipes away your weekend. Then
most of your work is I would say then during the week, but you have like a build up to the weekend and the match days.
Yes, we do, because there's a lot of things going on a match day other than the football. You know, we have half time entertainment. We arrange for ex players to go on the pitch. We have the Hit the Bar competition. We have lottery presentations that are charitable organisations to be looked after. Special case supporters who we bring in as our guests to meet the players. Any number of things. And again, you know, you can prepare as much as you like on a match day, but there's always the odd thing that will crop up.
Would you say that your match day is obviously the most important day for you?
I think so, because it's the most important day for the football club. How the rest of the week pans out is often largely dependent on the result. If we play a game on a Saturday at home and lose 4-0, I'm not going to have that many requests the following week, and we'll tailor everything that we do. We won't put as many stories on the website, because the players understandably probably won't want to speak. And I think a lot of the people that work at Everton are Evertonians anyway, and it's impossible not to be affected by a bad run of results.
So you were saying about you meet the characters of the club, the players of the club. Who to you would be then a big character within the club at the moment?
I've known Leon Osman since he was 14. He's a very good friend of mine, and I've really enjoyed watching him develop. I was in Radio Everton when he came in as a 14-year-old. He came in with his dad, and he came in with Ray Hall, because in those days in Radio Everton on a match day, we'd just interview anybody and anyone with a story to tell. And Leon signed his apprentice forms, his academy forms, on the day of a game up in the boardroom, and we brought him into Radio Everton, and he was a tongue-tied 14-year-old, as we all were at one stage. And I've enjoyed watching him grow and progress, not only as a footballer but as a man himself. He's got a young family of his own now, and he's a real character. He keeps everybody on their toes. He's the chief prankster.
And Phil Neville always comes across as a big character.
Phil Neville's been different class from the moment he walked through the door. He's a true club captain. You know, I speak with Phil an awful lot. I write his programme notes, and he's always asking me what's going on at the club, how is everybody, what's the feeling like around the club, and he's a really good guy. So he's so experienced. He prepares himself in the same way for every single football match that he played. I mean, towards the end of his career, he may well play reserve games, and he'll prepare himself exactly the same way as he did for the cup final, because he's that type of guy.
And he's, to you, you would say they'd describe him as the ultimate professional?
Absolutely, without a doubt. The managers described him in those terms as well.
What's your relationship like with the chairman and the manager? And you know, just give us an overall view of how the manager and the chairman react with each other.
Well, the chairman and the manager have both said publicly that they get on very well. And, you know, the chairman's done a magnificent job for Everton Football Club. You know, you can keep your billionaires, you can keep your sheikhs and your Russian businessmen. We've got the best chairman in the Premier League. He's got a real feel for the football club. But you need more than that to be a successful chairman. And Bill Kenwright is obviously a successful businessman. Some of the deals he's done for Everton Football Club have been absolutely terrific. And he can go from a top level boardroom meeting to walk outside Goodison Park on a match day and speak with a couple of fans who haven't got tickets for the game because they can't afford them. It doesn't matter to Bill. If you're involved with Everton Football Club, you're all part of the Everton family. And I think he's fairly unique in the game. And Evertonian, he's had a little bit of criticism in the past, as most club chairmen have. But the way football is being shaped at the moment, I think most Evertonians are coming around to the fact now that, you know, hey, we've got a really good chairman of this football club.
Good. What's your highs and lows while you've been at Goodison? You say you've been really here since 95.
One of the highs and lows was on the same evening, Fiorentina. It was just a pleasure to be involved in that game when we played Fiorentina at Goodison. And when Mikel Arteta scored from distance to make it 2-2 on aggregate, the noise was unbelievable. And, you know, I seen people, Evertonian journalists in the press box, hugging each other, and I'd never seen that before, and it was just fantastic. And I couldn't see any other result other than Everton victory. And when we lost on penalties, that was really deflating, it really was. But the ultimate high for me was the FA Cup semi-final against Manchester United. I'd gone from watching Everton in the stands to being a real part of Everton Football Club at Wembley. And to be involved in everything to do with the FA Cup semi-final and to be pitch side when the penalties were being taken, because we had to be there because Sky TV or ITV, I can't even remember which channel had it, were going to do flash interviews as soon as the penalties finished. They were going to interview the winning penalty taker or the winning penalty saver or either one of the managers. So I had to be at the side of the pitch. And when Phil Jagielka scored, it just exploded. The blue half of Wembley went berserk. All the staff ran onto the pitch to meet the players. And I was standing on my own for about 2 seconds, so I thought, not much I can do here. So I just ran on the pitch and joined in the lap of honour, which I shouldn't have done, probably. But I couldn't help myself. Been an Evertonian all my life, and to be at Wembley and to be so close to it all on that day, and I knew where my wife and my daughter were sitting, and you could see supporters crying, and even when I watch it on YouTube now, the whole occasion makes my spine tingle. It was indescribable.
So the final itself was a big team too far.
We were beaten by a better football team. You know, I was just so glad at the end of it that we hadn't been cheated, we hadn't been robbed, it hadn't been a mistake. We hadn't battered Chelsea but lost on a breakaway. Purely and simply, we were beaten on the day by a better football team. We went into the game as underdogs. And again, you know, I had to pinch myself. The night before the cup final, I was invited by a journalist to the Footballer of the Year Awards at the Grosvenor Hotel in London. Stephen Gerrard won the award, which took a slight shine off it, but it was a wonderful, wonderful occasion. So many big name football people there. And then to be a part of that and then move on to Wembley the next day was incredible. I must have sent 1,000 text messages that day, and I must have had 1,000 calls off people asking me what it was like. And it was just surreal that, you know, I had an access all areas pass for Wembley Stadium on the day of the FA Cup final. I had a club cup final suit on. We had the cup final banquet to prepare for in the evening. It was just all so surreal.
So I think you've already described my next question, which what are the benefits of working at Everton? Obviously there's highs and lows, but you get the benefits of seeing the players. And
absolutely. I mean, the benefits for me are travelling the world quite literally as part of Everton Football Club. We've been to America numerous occasions pre-season. We've been to some far-flung places in Europe. I mean, if I ever leave Everton Football Club, I probably won't go to Belarus again, or the Ukraine, or the Czech Republic maybe, but I've been to these places with Everton, and obviously Australia in the summer. And for me, they are real perks. They're hard work. You know, you get back from these trips and you're drained for a day or so because there's so much going on, particularly in Australia. But just to travel the world as part of Everton Football Club is an incredible perk.
And it obviously makes your job easy that you're an Everton supporter.
I think so. It certainly did when I used to write the programme. I mean, one thing I'm very proud of is the official history DVD, which I scripted from start to finish, and I worked with John Motson on that. I've got to know John Motson over the years, obviously, because our paths have crossed, and I asked him to narrate the official history DVD, and it was a massive challenge for me because you've got to get it right. Once it's on DVD, you can't make any adjustments. We had a premiere in the Odeon Cinema on London Road in Liverpool when it was released, and 350 Evertonians came along to watch it, and they all stood and applauded at the end of it, and that was a nice moment for me.
So what over the years, what changes have you seen at Goodison, and also obviously here at Finch Farm?
Well, this is one of the major changes for the football club. I mean, I like everybody else, I loved Belfield, because Belfield had such a tradition to it and such a spirit. There was so much history in there. You know, you were walking through the same door that Alan Ball walked through, and Joe Royle and Brian LeBone, and it was fantastic. But the football club outgrew Belfield, and this is an amazing complex, Finch Farm. I remember Alan Irvine, the assistant manager, saying to me, Dad, and he said, the only thing I'm worried about is that we don't take the Belfield spirit to Finch Farm. He said, we're determined to make sure that we do. And that's happened because of the way the players are, and the manager, and the coaching staff, and the backroom staff. The spirit here is as good as it was at Belfield, and that's absolutely crucial. But the main change, of course, is Sky, and the media now is absolutely massive. You know, there wasn't even a club website when I started, but now it's unbelievable. The requests that we get from all four corners of the globe, football's a global industry now, and there are more and more international markets coming into the game, and the media side of it has just exploded in the last 10 or 15 years.
Well, here at Finch Farm, could you just describe the setup here at Finch Farm? Because it's a massive leap in professionalism.
Yeah, it is. It's in the south end of the city, in the Halewood district. The first team are housed on one side, the academy on the other. There are 14 football pitches, one of which is under soil heating. There's a full-size pitch in the indoor gym. There's a weight room, a swimming pool, numerous dressing rooms. We're sitting in an academy classroom where the younger children come to continue their education while they're training. There's a library, a computer room, absolutely everything that you need for a Premier League football club. And this is one of the better training facilities in the Premier League. And I've met some strange people here. Emerson Tome was here a couple of days ago. Who used to play for Sheffield Wednesday, I believe. Gus Poyet was having a look around when Brighton played Tranmere Rovers. Gordon Banks was up to have a look around, and had the pleasure of speaking to Gordon. And everybody that comes here involved in football is just blown away by it because it's so good. And all the new players that come here say, wow, what a place this is. And it's easier, I would think, well, I know, for the academy to attract players. And I would think for the manager to attract players as well. If he's showing somebody around a complex like this, they can only but be impressed.
What about football and commercialism at the moment? I mean, an awful lot of money is around football. Has it become too commercial?
I don't think so. No, I think football's moved forward with the market. Everton, we were one of the last clubs, I suppose, to have a proper city centre presence. The genius marketing ploy to call the Everton shop in the city centre Everton 2 in the Liverpool 1 complex. And there is a demand for a city centre store for Everton Football Club supporters. We're not an internationally globally known brand like Liverpool. Liverpool can open a shop in Bangkok, in Hong Kong, in all four corners of the globe. We couldn't yet. you know, we're a long way behind Liverpool and Manchester United on that front. But while there's a demand, the club has to provide goods and services.
You talked before about fans and the relationship with the clubs. Has it changed over the years?
Everton work harder than most other clubs to engage with the supporters. We're currently embarking on a tour of supporters clubs. We've been to London, we've been to Mid Cheshire, Denby, Wales, Northern Ireland. We've had the Swedish supporters over, Jersey supporters, all the local branches, Wrexham as well. And basically myself, the chief executive Robert Elston, Graeme Sharp and the first team player go along to these supporters clubs. We have a 2-hour meeting with them. We throw the floor open for the supporters to ask any questions they like of me, the player, the chief executive, Graeme Sharp, and they've been wonderfully received. They've been terrifically received. The fans are so appreciative of us going out to see them, and it's as important for us as it is for the fans, because we need to know what the issues are. We need to know what's on the fans' minds, and if somebody isn't coming to the game, we need to know why, and if they are coming to the game, we need to know what the experience is like. Only through speaking to the supporters can we learn things like that. And we've got an annual fan survey which goes out to everybody on the database, and I'm not sure many clubs do that.
So it's a two-way process. So the description of the people's club, would you say that's correct?
I would, yeah. It was a great line from the manager when he first arrived. It endeared him to the Evertonians, and I would say so. I think it's perfectly applicable.
What do you think about the idea of a ground share with Liverpool Football Club?
You know what, in all honesty, it's not something I've given a lot of thought to. There are pros and cons, obviously. You know, Liverpool are having trouble finding a stadium. We're having trouble finding a stadium. Would a shade stadium work? I'm not so sure. You'd have to find out what the complexities were. You know, what would happen to the ground staff, for example, who'd be responsible for the pitch? And,
yeah.
You know, we might want the manager might want the pitch saturated. Liverpool might want it kept dry. There are a lot of things. It would the seats couldn't be red. They couldn't be blue. They'd have to be purple. It's a difficult one. In an ideal scenario, I wouldn't want a shared stadium. But like everybody else, you know, you never say never, and you can't rule it out.
I don't know if you went to the game up at Athens. That was a shared stadium, and it had a pretty soulless atmosphere about it. You know, as soon as the game was finished, the signs were taken down, and you know, it didn't have a feel of a football club to me.
No, it didn't. Athens. I mean, I'm not sure what the relationship is like between the two clubs in Athens, but you know, you've got 100-odd years of history between Everton and Liverpool, and people say, "Well, it works in the San Siro." But you know, they've shared the stadium for a long, long time. It's really different here. I mean, a lot of the new stadiums can be pretty soulless. You know, I much prefer a four-sided football ground than a bowl. You know, the Emirates is a wonderful, wonderful complex, but it hasn't got the feel of Highbury. I much prefer a four-sided football stadium.
Have you worked for any other clubs at all? And if so, how did he differ from the Everton Football Club?
I haven't worked for any other football clubs.
Okay. What about the future? What does it hold for Everton?
I think the club's just going to keep progressing. You know, we seem to be on a sound financial footing. The manager's certainly pushing the team in the right direction. Season ticket sales crop up each year. The retail side of the business is going well. So I think the future is very, very bright for Everton Football Club. And as I say, I think keeping the chairman where he is, keeping the manager where he is pivotal to any progress the football club makes, because at the end of the day, it is all about results. You know, you've seen that with Leeds United's a perfect example. If the results don't go right on the football field, it can be like a house of cards, and it really can come crumbling down. And you know, it's there for the grace of God go we, because we were close to relegation, obviously, in 94 and 98, and flirted with it a couple of times under Walter, but I think we're on a really sound footing at the moment. I think the future is bright, and I think the fans realise that. I think the fans are embracing that.
Good. Just going back to about you talk about the Everton Former Players Association, could you just give us a quick description of what that is, and do other clubs have that?
Other clubs do. We were one of the first. It's the 10th anniversary this year. Dr. David France came up with the idea 10 years ago to establish a registered charity that basically funded necessary health work, dental work, necessary housing repairs for former players. Anybody that's ever played at least one game for Everton Football Club is entitled to help from the Former Players Foundation. The likes of Jim Pearson and Gordon West, amongst others, have been public with the help that they've got, that they've had in the past. And it's fantastic because, although it's a separate registered charity, there's a lot of good PR in it for Everton Football Club, because we as a football club wholeheartedly support it. The former players get a bundle of tickets for every home game. They organise raffles in all the corporate lounges. The kit men are very supportive. They'll give me old boots and shirts to get signed and auctioned off and raffled off. And the football club and the Former Players Foundation work very, very closely together, and it's something that everybody is very proud of.
Well, listen, thank you very much. Is there anything you would like to add to that, Darren?
Don't think so. I think it's all done.
Thank you.